There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
For nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out an all-point bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention.
New world order.
Attention.
Government is
an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones
Radio Program.
And now for something completely different.
Howdy-ho, neighbors. Thank you for tuning in to Stronghold Radio. I am Dutch Jones. I'm here all alone in the broadcast booth. Lou had to run out to go move some irrigation. This feels really weird, just having me in here alone. I'm not used to that. I'm used to having other people around. I think it's the first time ever I've been the only one in the booth to start the show. But thank you for tuning in and giving us a listen. If you haven't listened before, stick it out. Give it 2 hours. The second hour is going to be great. It is Thursday, the 14th of July, 2011, which of course means it's time for Practical Christianity at 6 p.m. Pacific time. You get me for an hour. Then Pastor Warren Mark Campbell will come in, and he's going to discuss. It's always good. He comes in every Thursday when he's here. Sometimes we have to play sermons, but due to the workload here. But he comes in, and he just has awesome teachings for all of us. So stick around for that. You can muddle through my blatherings, whatever it is, and if you can do that, then it's well worth listening for the second hour. What we do here at this little Stronghold radio outlet, we broadcast on the internet, and we also have 93.3 FM Vice Gerent Radio, which goes out locally. It goes about 8 miles in every direction. We wish it were more, but we realize that our bigger audience is on the internet. And what we do is we reach out with a militant Christian attitude. It's a worldview that you're not going to find in a lot of different churches. In fact, very, 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 very few pastors will get out and preach the kind of thing that we teach. Now, I'm not a preacher. I'm not a pastor. I don't speak for the church at Kuya. I am simply the trainer for the group up here. And this little hobby of mine, going on the radio, is just my way of reaching more people to get them to pay attention and maybe prepare their families. There's a lot in the news today. I tried working a little bit this morning and tweaked my back, so I've been laying down listening to our KMJ AM 580 radio feed that we get up here out of Fresno. And it's, you know, the typical Rush Limbaugh, all that kind of stuff. And, of course, they're talking about the debt ceiling stuff. You're not going to hear that kind of stuff here other than maybe I'll make a few comments on it. But I do find it funny. The one overwhelming comment that hit me was when they reported that Obongo yesterday said don't call my bluff and got up and walked out of the room. He said a few other things, but don't call my bluff. That's like saying don't make me prove to you I'm lying. I thought that was one of the greatest exposures for an idiot president in history. That's way better than not being able to spell potato. That's way better than anything that any of the other candidates may or may not have said. So Obongo saying, don't make me call my bluff. Yeah, 2 Chronicles 7:14. If his people will in his name, I don't have it in front of me, but good one will heal the land. Scotty's always putting good verses in there. It kind of catches me off guard sometimes, but it's always good to stay focused that way. 2 Chronicles 7:14. God will heal our land if we are righteous and following Him, and we pray to Him and do that. Somebody today, I can't remember who it was. I don't know if it was one of the guys in the chat room or what, but I had posted some stuff on Facebook about redoing the Constitution, and people were saying, well, why do we need to redo it? The one we have is fine. Well, no, it's adequate. We need to strip away everything past the Bill of Rights. But our Constitution doesn't acknowledge Christ enough. It needs to be a strong interwoven thread of Christianity inside of that Constitution for it to be. It'll never be perfect, but for it to be a much better document. I really pray for that. So, and one of the things that I like about the Constitution is that it's a contract. It's voluntary, although, you know, Lincoln made it involuntary, but in reality it was intended to be voluntary. And one of the things I wanted to talk about today is this secession movement in California is really picking up. No, not from the Union, but there are a handful of counties that are seeking to remove themselves from the state of California. And at first I kind of poo-pooed it because I thought, well, I hear that all the time. If Whirlin were in here, we always hear about Jefferson Territory wanting to secede from the Union and stuff. But the state of California is so big and so overbearing that people are always talking about, well, we need to break it up into like three independent states and all of that. And, of course, they're attacking this guy who's wanting to do it. I forgot his name down there. I have to look it up real quick here. Basically what it is several counties, less Los Angeles City. There's San Bernardino, Riverside, Tulare, Kings, Inyo. Let me find it here. Let me pull it up here. Got it right here. Want to secede and make Southern California, even though it's not really Southern California. It's more like Eastern California. It's more of a coast versus inland versus North, Central, and South California. But they've actually, several Board of Supervisors in different counties are going to look into this. Because of the financial crisis, I think now more than ever, people don't want to go down with Sacramento, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Santa Barbara, you know, and the different big cities that are destroying this state. So 51st state, small step forward for Longshot's South California plan. A Republican member of the Riverside County Board of Supervisors wants his county and 12 others, 12 now, before it was 7, to secede from California to form the 51st state. His colleagues gave him an unenthusiastic go-ahead Tuesday to explore the idea, which is weird because I didn't think anybody would even listen to this guy. But an effort to turn 13, see now it says 13, now how many is it? 12, okay, so it's a total of 13. An effort to turn 13 Southern California counties into the nation's 51st state took a small step forward Tuesday, but remains an extreme long shot, experts say. They always say experts, who are these experts? Four members of the Riverside County Board of Supervisors agreed Tuesday to allow a fifth member to convene a statewide meeting on the subject in the fall. Each of the four supervisors stated their objections to the secession idea, but went ahead and approved the idea of at least talking about it when Supervisor Jeff Stone said he would personally see to it that private funding, not public money, would be used to hold the meeting. Since the days of the Gold Rush, more than 220 campaigns to split California into halves or thirds have been tossed around. Mr. Stone's vision involves persuading 13 counties to secede from the state, which he says raids local coffers to plug budget gaps. Well, that's true. We know that's the way it is in most states. Stone's idea has some merit, some analysts say. It addresses the problematic balance of power between Sacramento and California localities, as well as the political reality that the 13 counties in Stone's secession movement are far more conservative than the rest of the state. But the vision remains legally and politically unrealistic. Many add, and is perhaps not the best solution for a problem it seeks to address. Now they're saying that there's legal problems. Why is it illegal for a county to want to be part of another state or be its own state? Where does that come from? It's just ridiculous that it would even be illegal for people to even want to secede from a state or a nation. Even if everyone in the 13 counties approved of partition, it would still require an approval of the state legislature. Though theoretically possible, such approval is practically impossible, says Jack Pitney, professor of government at Claremont McKenna College. Nothing like Stone's plan has happened since West Virginia broke off from Virginia during the Civil War. And then only because a rump legislature approved after the regular legislature joined the Confederacy, says Professor Pitney. Stone, South California, would not include Los Angeles. In addition to Riverside County, the counties targeted for secession would be, now if you're in California, listen to this, Fresno, Imperial, Indio, Kern, Kings, Madeira, Mariposa, Mono, Orange, San Bernardino, San Diego, and Tulare, which include about 13 million people. Now, let's take a look at that. Let's look at these counties here. Those of you that don't know anything about California, I could have just said Bob, Fred, and it wouldn't have made a difference to you. But Riverside County, I could go either way on that. It's not too bad. It includes Palm Springs, the city of Riverside, city of Moreno Valley, which is kind of a whole. You've got the Meth Valley out there and Mead Valley, I think it's called. It's not the greatest place in the world. Imperial County, farming community down Southern California. I think it's on the southern end of the Salton Sea. Inyo is a mountain county. One thing about Inyo County is they have concealed carry there for everybody. There's less than 100,000 people in the whole county. Kern County, that's like Bakersfield towards the mountains down there. Not a bad area. Kings County, very corrupt farming community to our west here. It's the next county over from Tulare. Kings County would have the one asset there is the Lemoore Naval Air Station. Madera County, that's north of Fresno. I drive through it. I don't know much about it. I think that's that may, and I'm not looking in the chat room now, but that may be where Yosemite is. Mariposa, another one up there. Mono County is on the other side of the mountains. It's adjacent to Tulare County. Tulare County, which is a weird county, encompasses a little bit of the plains, a little bit of the valley, excuse me. I'm thinking back to Colorado. A little bit of the farming community, the front foothill area, and then it goes through the mountains and then on the other side. Mono County is over there. Now, San Bernardino, that's where I have my problem. San Bernardino County is one of the largest counties. I think it's the fourth largest county in the United States, if not in the top two. I used to work for San Bernardino County. It is a hole. It's known as the Inland Empire. You've got Fontucky. You've got San Bernardino itself. It just terrible. Fontana. I said Fontucky, but Ontario airports there. That's where the California Speedway is in San Bernardino County. But as a whole, the county is probably, I would say, if not 50%, it's dang close to everyone being on welfare in that county. You do have some mountains, the San Bernardino National Forest, Big Bear, Arrowhead, the desert. The huge desert goes all the way out to the Colorado River, out to Needles. And yes, it does go relatively, in the rural areas, conservative, but the cities of San Bernardino are just liberal, crack-smoking scum. In fact, I think it was Acorn in San Bernardino was one of those video exposés that they got. San Diego County, that would be a tough one for me because San Diego, I love it. It's beautiful down there, but it's on the border. I don't want to be part of a state that has a border with Mexico. And, of course, the last one I'm in, Tulare County, which I think is the greatest county in the whole state that I know of. I haven't been that far north, to be honest with you. But Tulare County was a Confederate county during the War of Federal Aggression. They actually seceded from the Union, and federal troops came here to occupy. There were skirmishes here with Confederate militias. If it were me, if I had my druthers, I'd tell San Bernardino, San Diego, I didn't even talk about Orange yet, Orange County and down there to be their own. And then we would be Kings, Fresno, Tulare, and a couple up here for Central. But Orange County, which surprised me in all of this, Orange County is a very conservative area. There are more guns per person in Orange County, I think, than anywhere else in the U.S. It's all upper class, tech type work. It's Orange County. It's when you think of California, you know, fake boobs, bleach blonde hair, you know, that kind of stuff. McMansions, that's Orange County. There's lots of universities there, colleges, that type of stuff. They could be a nation unto themselves. But I just make that comment on there. They have nothing in common with, say, Kern, Inyo, Kings, Madera, Mariposa, or Tulare, or even Mono County. It's over there on its own. There's like a whole militia group over there that I talk to every once in a while. But they're clearing the other side of the mountains, and it takes like an all-day drive to get there because you have to go south through Bakersfield. So I don't know why he made these connections. The cultural, economic, industrial, everything is completely different in these. Maybe that's why. Not one of these counties other than, well, San Diego's a port city, so you would maybe he pick San Diego County for it being a port. That would be critical for our farming here for us to get our stuff to market on a global scale. But, I mean, it's not like we're going to become an independent country, so we could still ship our stuff out any way we wanted to. I actually see three separate states in his collection here. Now, Republicans account for the majority of registered voters in all but two of the 13 counties, San Bernardino and Imperial. San Bernardino, because it's got a heavy Latino population, and Imperial, it's a farming community, farming county, so there's a lot of farm workers there that are all going to be Democrats. For that reason, the idea has merit, says Robert Stern, president of the Center for Governmental Studies. He says the real division would not be one between Northern and Southern California, but internal and coastal instead. This would divide the state in a way that makes political sense. Liberals in coastal California, conservatives in East California, he adds. It would allow the liberals to increase taxes to pay for those services they want, and the conservatives to reduce regulations and taxes in their state. Which would be great. You know, I'm not going to hold my breath for this, but there's a lot of people there that basically at the meeting, people called him names, Mr. Stone names, said, you know, redneck, fool, you know. If you don't like it, go to Arizona. That was one of the comments. So there's a place for people like you in California. It's called Arizona, is what one politico said. Now, California is way too big to be one state. It's too big to be managed by Sacramento. It's too big to be managed by Los Angeles. And you have Los Angeles complaining that they make all the money because of the film industry and have to support the rest of the state. Well, I would say we here in the Central Valley produce all the food and have to support the rest of the state. It's ridiculous to me that this hasn't been taken seriously in all the hundreds of times that it's come up. I don't get around enough in Northern California. I've traveled through it twice in my life as an adult. That's it. But I think that we have a huge opportunity here to jump on this. Now, the rest of you are going, but I don't live in California. What do I care? Could you imagine if we could take a few counties, even anywhere? It doesn't have to be Montana. It doesn't have to be, you know, Arkansas or Missouri. But anywhere, and we could start a enclave where people could flee to. And do it within the United States of these Americas. at first, before a major secession where we actually pull out of the union. But I think this is a great idea, and I'm really going to push to support this guy, although I don't like the counties that he's put together, but the fact that they're talking about it. I'm going to make sure that I reach out to our county board of supervisors here in Tulare County and say, hey, yeah, let's do this. Let's get out of here. Right where I live, we've got way too many liberals. And I know they would fight it, but I think in the valley, part of Tulare and the mountainous part. I don't know if we I don't know if it went to a vote how hard it would be to do. Let's put it that way, because the liberals in California have the money. We would have to motivate, activate, and get out the conservative vote, and I hate that term conservative. It would be really, really, really a nice blow to all these scumbags if we could even get it to come close where they have to expend a lot of effort to stop it. And it would be a nice rallying cry. You know, I think that this is something that a lot of states should look at. You know, they always talk about flyover country, you know. But here in California, we have flyover counties. You leave Los Angeles County, and like here in Tulare, I never knew that Tulare County was here until 5 years ago when I was... led here by fate, by my destiny, as it were, that there were places like this in California. I was ready to write off all of California. It's like when Warren's in the chat room, he says, well, Mark Kornke is always saying that California's a lost cause, let it go. Well, that's because you don't get here and move around and see. You know, I'm sure if you could see these different counties, not necessarily San Diego and stuff, but these regions here and the counties I haven't even been to, that there is hope even within the state of California, but we've got such a burden of the Marxist, socialist, scummunists on our back. We've got to find a way to separate and divorce. It's a divorce is what it is. And people, oh, you're a Christian talking about divorce. Well, God divorced Israel, so why can't we divorce the liberal portions of California here? I think it's really a good idea. To at least explore this. If nothing else, it will throw salt in the wounds as they're trying to fix the economy here in California. They're doing some pretty stupid stuff. Today they passed a law in California that will probably be signed by Governor Moonbeam that our electoral college will not be our electoral college votes. You know, those of you that know what that is, I'm not going to go and try and explain that because sometimes even I don't think I get it. Instead of giving them to who the popular vote of California goes for, let's say California votes traditionally Democrat, right? 60% Democrat, 40% Republican. All the Electoral College votes will go for the Democrat, just the way it is. Well, now they passed a law, the Assembly and the House here in California, that the Electoral College votes will go for whoever wins the popular vote nationally. So whoever wins the popular vote nationally will get all of California's, I don't even remember how much it is, Electoral College votes. But it's a bizarre and unusual thing. And I can see IC Freedom said the Electoral College needs to be abolished. I think that its initial intent was a good thing, but they've manipulated it and twisted it around so much that it's ridiculous. It's like how we used to elect our senators. We wouldn't have a popular vote to elect our senators. They would be appointed from the assembly. The governor would appoint people, and they'd be approved, and they'd be sent out. But yet they said, well, everybody should vote on that. And then what happens? California gets always two Democrat senators that just go and wreak havoc on the rest of the country. But yeah, it's weird that they're doing this, but it takes California. But this may come back to bite them, because what happens if Obongo in this next election, excuse me, I want to move the microphone here a little bit, if Obongo doesn't get the popular vote? Because of course they're thinking about Gore Bush, you know, when they say Gore was ripped off, because I guess Gore got the popular vote and Bush got the Electoral College plus, you know, state Supreme Court decisions from Florida. So I don't know. This may come back to bite them. It's ridiculous. We're the only state to do this. And I think the other states are going to be furious because it kind of perverts the whole system. Another thing they did, and the governor did sign this today, that now is part of the California cesspool system in history. In history, when they're teaching history, political science, social studies, K through 12. Now listen to this very carefully. If a historical figure that they're discussing happens to be a homosexual, a lesbian, a crossdresser, transgender, alien sex fiend, whatever it is, it has to be depicted in our textbooks now, K through 12. They need to highlight the contributions of the, I can't remember, transgender, gay, lesbian, whatever it is. They have to be pointed out in our textbooks. And I know what most people are saying, well, why would you send your kids to public school anyway? But what's funny is they're not allowing, you know, before, if it was part of sex education, you could opt to have your kid not go to that. But now it is the law of the land that you do not have the right to pull your kid out of a history class that is teaching about, say, Harvey Milk or whatever his name was, the first gay politician to get elected in San Francisco. The problem is, I'm kind of mixed on this because they already teach a perverted form of history in the public schools anyway. But maybe this will wake some people up, and you know, kids will just. If it were me, I would provoke my kids. You know, I don't have control of our daughter, but you know where that's at. But if Lou was going to public school, I'd say just constantly challenge it. Oh, George Washington, raise me. What was George Washington's sexual preference? Since we're discussing all the sexual preferences of all the historical figures, and Jefferson, what was he into? And just annoy the heck out of the teachers, and just drag it and draw it out. Because why do we even have to know these things? And one, they're going to lie. I think they're going to cast back in throughout history. And I have no doubt that there are homosexual key figures in American history. But maybe it may backfire on them, and they'll find out that a lot of them may not have been all that good. What was the one, the McCarthy trials? You know, there's rumors that Joe McCarthy was, Tail Gunner Joe was a homosexual, that kind of stuff. It's weird. And like IC Freedom, he just stole my next point. Okay, if we're going to be allowed to point out the sexual proclivities of historical figures, then maybe then we should get a legislation put through that they have to point out the faith of different historical figures. Are they going to talk about George Washington being a prayer warrior? Are they going to talk, oh, I like this, the way he puts it. Are they allowed to share the history fact that there was prayer in school at one time? I like that. So we could go after and say, well, you know, this person was a Christian. This person was a Methodist. This person was a Catholic. This person was a Jew. This person, you know, whenever we bring up a historical, if we're going to talk about their sexual proclivity, why not their entire makeup of their personality? This guy liked to collect toy trains. Oh, it's a known fact that Thomas Jefferson grew hemp. Oh, it's a known fact that John Hancock was a bootlegger. And just load them down with the minutiae of facts. They want to know everything about it, fine. And then take it this far. Tell me what you think of this. Point out every villain in history that was a socialist or a democrat or a communist when they're talking about World War II. Oh, by the way, Hitler was a national socialist, much like your president now, Obongo. Oh, by the way, Stalin was a leftist communist, much like just about every politician in California up in the House, like our two senators, like Hillary Clinton. I'd point out all the stuff the Fabian socialists did, you know, euthanasia, sterilization of those with lower IQs. Talk about Planned Parenthood being started by the Fabian socialists so that they could sterilize minorities and undesirable types. They opened a Pandora's box here. I doubt people in the public school system are willing. If I was a teacher, oh, this would be greatest. Well, if we can talk about, you know, their perversions, why can't we talk about everybody's everything? Let's dig everything out of the closet and see what they can do. But I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen. I think it's going to be bad. It's going to make for some embarrassing moments around the dinner table. Daddy, I was at school today, and they were talking about Alexander the Great and how he conquered the known world. Yeah, that's great. I'm glad you learned about that. Yeah, did you know that he was an aggressive bottom and that he was into like role-playing, and he was, I think the word was homosexual. I don't know what that means, Daddy. You know, that's what it's going to cause, and I have a feeling it's going to... I wouldn't want to be at the parent-teacher conferences when they do this. Hopefully the teachers will just kind of skim over, but they're going to print the textbooks with what money, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to afford new textbooks to put in there. Maybe they'll just... What you should do is get a little stamp that says fag and not fag, rubber stamps, and just go through all the history books and stamp over all the names. Not fag, not fag, not fag. Oh, fag. Maybe we could do that. Maybe we should volunteer. We should set up some committees to identify all the fags in history. In the history book. And then science, you know, if they're going to talk about some, you know, was Madame Curie a little butch? I don't know, but I guess our kids are going to find out in California, aren't they? But that's social engineering at its peak here in California. And it's getting weird, it's getting scary, it's getting to the point where we have to do a lot more. And, you know, what did Christ say? Occupy till he returns. Keep doing it. Well, you're listening to Stronghold Radio. Those of you that are listening, those of you that are listening later, welcome. We'll be back right after the break with more of whatever's in my head. Ninja suits, leaving imprints of their combat boots in the meadow down near the neighbor next to me. Heard they're building concentration camps from the rate hike off our postage stamps to protect and defend their great democracy. Though my vote in the last election didn't quite match the same projection, maybe those beautiful talking heads on my TV. And when I called them to complain, and I asked them to explain, they just said that it proves that you're not in the groove of the new majority. Yeah, sure. Well, just between you and me, can't you feel the conspiracy? Can't you sense the hypocrisy, as they call it, democracy? Well, it's a threat to your sanity, and not to mention your liberty. And it's all an evil, filthy, rotten conspiracy. Now they've got microwaves and laser beams and rays to look inside your dreams and satellites that can see your DVDs. They got chips that fit inside your head that'll make you think their thoughts instead, and drugs that'll make you do just as they please. And to make things even more serious, they got strains of new bacterias that are surely to cause some unknown new disease.
And that's why we got fear and high anxiety and paranoid perplexity and the gradual loss of all our liberties. And as they try to bring us all down, they might leave us with a frown. They might even be the source of all the rumors in this town. Well, just between you and me, can't you feel the conspiracy? Can't you sense a hypocrisy, as they call it democracy? Well, it's a threat to your sanity, and not to mention your liberty. And if it's all an evil, filthy, rotten conspiracy. Our mail and all our incoming phone calls to the Central Intelligence Agency. We'll just hope and pray someday they'll see that you and me are not the enemy, nor do we believe in cult theology. And as their police try to bust us, we'll keep trying to find some justice, though it's hidden behind a wall of masonry. We'll keep working out our salvation with the feeling of fear and trembling, hoping and praying someday the truth might set us all free. That just cause the media won't respond don't mean there's nothing going on. And brother, what'll you do if there's something to all the words inside this song? Well, you can say that I'm wild-eyed, that all my fears are unjustified, or that I'm totally mystified by a man who's crucified. But just between you and me, what hung him up on that tree? It was all an evil, filthy, rotten conspiracy. It's all an evil, filthy, rotten conspiracy. Believe me.
Third time I've said that. I'll probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
We're back. Stronghold Radio. I love the breaks when I can get into the chat room. We're kind of trying to remember all the different, what do you call them, derogatory terms for homosexuals. if you can't laugh at this stuff, it'd make you cry. Just the weird things you're doing. Bring down the studio monitor. It's making me echo in my head. And it's just, there's so much out there. There's so much they're doing that is just stupid, stupid, stupid. Welcome back to Stronghold Radio. I am Dutch Jones for another half hour. And then at 6 p.m. Pacific time, we're going to have Pastor Warren Mark Campbell in here with Practical Christianity. Let me make sure his mic works. I don't know if Lou tested it.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
I could interview myself.
Yes, you could. Okay, good. That works. And we're bringing you the militant Christian worldview. Irreverent humor. Well, it's probably not very funny. I wouldn't call it humor. Sarcasm. Irreverent sarcasm. And a lot, huh? It's kind of dry. It's dry, Lou says. Not a lot of people can like it. Maybe that's why we have low viewer numbers now. I don't know. I must be just offending everyone. But that's okay, because I haven't really changed the message, have I? You guys give me feedback. Have I really changed? Have I changed? It's not me. It's you. It's the listener. Or is it me? I don't know. But I just keep doing what I'm doing every day. The stuff goes through my head that I want to share with you. And while I'm running a wood chipper, a weed eater, or swinging a machete at some guy's head because he trespassed. No, I'm just kidding. I wouldn't use a machete. It's too bloody. I'm always thinking of what I should be sharing with you guys to get the point across of what we're trying to do here. Don't forget, of course, we're going to have Man Camp the 22nd, 23rd. 24th is worship and fellowship on that day. I got people calling. We've sent out a mailing. I had somebody call today, and it was funny. He just said he couldn't make it, and I thought that was really, rather nice. A gentleman called and said, hey, I really wish I could be there, but I can't make it. I didn't get the flyer till today. And so now we know next year we send out the flyers like a week or two earlier. I don't know. Why are people so busy in the summertime? It's not like anybody has money to do anything. It's kind of weird, actually. But I guess people are doing stuff. I'm not. We're not. We're just staying here in our little converted milk house. And we did go swimming. That was like a vacation. For us, a vacation is going to Grandma's house with air conditioning, cable television, well, satellite TV, really good internet, and all the tater tots and fish sticks Lou and I can eat. It's like going to Disneyland for us, right, Lou? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't play with your glasses, Lou. Put your glasses. What are you doing?
I'm not doing anything.
Lou's trying to be goofy, and it's not even that hot. We can't even. It's like really nice out. It's in the 80s, I think. So it's been an excellent weather day. So don't forget about Man Camp. Don't forget about this Sunday. We're going to have our open public training for shelter operations. I got to sit down and print out some stuff for that, the worksheets for that, so that you guys can come up with some really good scenarios. Well, actually, I'll have the scenarios. You come up with the answers to the scenarios. That's the way it works. And if you just show up on Sunday, 10 a.m., go to church with us, have chow with us, and then from about 1 to 4, we'll go through the tabletop and we'll do some training together. What do you think? Sound like a date? You, me, 40 of our closest friends? What do you think? Well, in the category of I can't believe our government does this stupid stuff, and this one's probably not going to surprise you too much, but first Afghan female military pilots arrive in U.S. for training. That's right. We're training female Muslims to be combat pilots. San Antonio, Texas is a story from Reuters. And I'm going to butcher the names. You guys know I'm famous for that. Sura Saleh, wearing a black scarf to cover her hair and an olive drab Afghan army uniform, doesn't look like a cultural warrior. See, they're trying to make her out to be like some suffragette, you know, for Muslim female rights. But she and three fellow Afghan women, the first of their gender to qualify, That makes it sound like they're men. It should say, but she and three sister Afghan women, the first of their gender to qualify as pilots in the Afghan army, may help change attitudes about women in their conservative Muslim homeland, where women's voices often go unheard. I hear them all the time when they're showing stuff on the Afghan. You always hear them la 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 in the background doing those camel calls. They don't often go unheard. Every video I ever see of the Middle East, you hear the women wailing. Anyway, that's just me. We're going to open the door for other ladies in Afghanistan, the Afghan Army Second Lieutenant told reporters at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio. It is a big deal for us to open this door for others. Other ladies who feel that they can do it. We want to show them. They can do it. Afghan's first crop of female military pilots arrived for training this week, where they will first study English at the Defense Language Institute in Lackland. Dozens of male Afghan pilots have gone through similar training in the United States. After 6 to 8 months of language study, they will travel to Fort Rucker in Alabama for helicopter pilot training in the U.S. Army Thunder Lab program. I like that name, Thunder Lab. Sounds like a really loud dog, Thunder Lab. What a great day for this, said Colonel Eric Axelbank, commander of the 37th Training Wing, which oversees U.S. Air Force basic training at Lackland. This is a huge step, having female officers who will become pilots in a traditionally male-dominated field. Yeah, let's train our enemies. Since the austere, they keep using that word, you know, austerity, austere, Jane Austen-like, Taliban government was toppled by U.S.-backed Afghan forces in 2001, women in Afghanistan have won back basic rights in education, voting, and work, which the militant group considered un-Islamic. But they face an uncertain future as Afghan and foreign leaders have embraced the idea of seeking a negotiated end to 10 years of war through talks with the Taliban. Some analysts warn That could mean a step back for women's rights. Well, they'll be over here and they'll just give them refugee status. The women pilots will be among 1,200 students at the Institute, where students from around the world learn English, a global vernacular of aviation. Axelbank said the Afghan women will undergo the same course of study in the United States as have male Afghan pilots, along with thousands of other military personnel who have trained at Lackland over the decades. Yeah, let's train people that are our potential enemies. This is the stepping stone in the development of an Afghan military, said Colonel Howard Jones. Hey, I love that guy. Howard Jones, you know, from the 80s. He had a lot of great songs, you know, and that weird hair he had. It's nice to know he's a colonel now. Colonel Howard Jones, head of the Institute. So they got some British guy, British pop singer. That's pretty good. I bet 90% of you didn't get that joke. In Texas, the women will not only learn English, but also U.S. military history and American culture. Axelbank said gender integration was a key part of the role that the women will play when they return to Afghanistan. Sure they will. In addition to training pilots, the women will return to Afghanistan where they will meet men who will, for the first time, find a woman who is not a relative in the role of an authority figure in their lives. Yeah, they're going to totally cause problems. Second Lieutenant Masuma Husani said she just wanted to get her hands on the controls of a military helicopter to fulfill a lifelong dream of being a pilot and to show that she was capable of the job. Yeah, a lifelong dream of flying a helicopter into a building. That's not in the article. I just put that in there. I want to do it, and I want to show that I can do it, said Husani of Bayaman province in central Afghanistan. It used to be that the women of Afghanistan couldn't do anything. She said that when she joined the army, her parents were proud. They said I was as brave as a man, she said. Yeah, well, great. So they continue to do this kind of stuff. I don't see any benefit to this. Look what happened. Look at all the blowback on Pakistan. Look how much help we gave Pakistan. And look where it ended up. Look where it ended up. I got to find this other article here. Real quick, but you guys talk amongst yourselves. What do you think about Afghan pilots, female pilots? Oh no, I can't find it. Okay, where is this? Stop. Oh, here, no. I don't know did I do this one on New Mexico town dissolves police department after gun smuggling scandal? I had a better one. I had one where they forced a police chief to take some time off without pay because he wouldn't meet with Islam. I guess I didn't post that one. Maybe we'll get to it tomorrow. But we've got an entire border town in New Mexico where the police force, the mayor, everybody had to be arrested because they were smuggling drugs. That's that one. Let's see, I've got this one here, Man Camp, we've already talked about that. How to Build a Chicken Coop, we talked about that yesterday. You guys picking up what I'm putting down? Okay, I just did, can you wear, oh, my question on that article was about these Afghan women, can you actually wear a burqa and a flight helmet? I don't know. I don't know. Huh? Someone said that in the chat room? See, it's not just me. I'm not the only redneck that thinks these kind of things. Where is this? The dark side of the... No, I don't want to talk about that. Oh, here's a good one. Do you know that what Bernanke said? Bernanke said that gold was not money. That the only reason they keep gold around for the U.S. economy is out of just for historical, sentimental purposes. So if that's true, then I don't see why... Why the government should have any gold. I find it hilarious that Bernanke would say something like that. And I don't even need to go into the... what's the word I'm looking for? Into the story, because it just shows the stupidity of them when they say something. And I found the article I want to talk about here, so let me get back over there real quick. Let me turn that down. Maybe you click on that and this. Lots of ugly female candidates. Yeah, Sin City Militia saying about these Afghan female pilots that the men will refuse to fly with them and not to wear the hijab under the flight helmet. Just weird. Actually, what I see happening in this, that they will, in fact, wash out. They won't make it. The other Afghan men are going to pressure them out. It's going to be like one of those movies, you know, with Sigourney Weaver or something where they get gang raped by the other flight cadets or something. I see Freedom on the comment I made about gold not being money. He says, then why do you have to pay 28% capital gains on a gold sale then? Exactly. So it just shows they lie. Political speech is the ability to lie without people knowing you're lying. And to make the wind sound like it has substance. I think that was a quote I heard today. Obama and his ilk make the wind sound like it has substance. So that's, oh, great, it didn't load. Try again. My article didn't load. Here we go. Stand by. We're waiting on the internet, folks. Again, talk amongst yourselves. If you've got snacks, go ahead and open them up. Put your feet up. Sit back. Relax. Lou, it's not working. What happened here? What's wrong with my internet, Lou? Why can't I see the article that I clicked on? Here we go. No, well, let me find. I had this great article on police corruption and abuse is on the rise, and that the fact that they're doing more and more crooked things. The cops are being charged with murder, rape, all kinds of everything that the mafia used to do. You've got law enforcement doing it now. And I had this great article from Brass Check TV. It's gotten to the point where I fear the police more than I do a common criminal, because I can still shoot a common criminal, but if a cop wants to come and kill you, you have to submit and basically let him kill you. But I don't have that article, so I won't be able to get to that point and read the article for you. But it's a typical theme here for me. I have no love for law enforcement. I definitely don't hero worship. And yeah, it won't load the article. Isn't that funny? They probably pulled it. Too many people got mad, or some cop complained. Hey guys, what are you doing making fun of me? I'm a modern day knight. I'm out there on the road protecting you. Let's see here. Somebody sent me a withdrawal of consent and a cease and desist demand, kind of a modern declaration of independence. I'm not going to go into that. It's too bad we can't get audio off of this. Because I would, I could play that Bernanke comment where he's, Ron Paul's grilling him when he said that. But anyway, okay, we'll move on then. I can't read you the articles that I want to because they've been taken off the internet. Folks, let me go over here. Stand by. I hate it when I don't have my articles. I could do stuff off the top of my head, but I've listened to myself when I do that, and it gets really weird. And see who it is. See if they want to go on the air. I don't know who that is.
Hello?
We've got calls coming in. It could be for Man Camp. You're supposed to answer at Dutch Jones Radio.
Thank you.
Oh, tell her I'm on the air right now. My daughter's calling. Is everything okay? Tell her I'll call her back when I get off.
They'll call you back at 7.
Yeah. I love it when she calls, but she always calls when I'm on the air. I don't know who this 707 phone number is. Must be. Hope she's not in Canada now. I don't want to get calls from Canada. The FBI will come over here and start wanting to know why I'm getting calls from Canada. They'll call me a Canadian Fifth Column member. But that's the way it goes. Okay, well, I'll just move on to the next thing I wanted to talk about. One of the critical things that we discussed last night, and I don't know if the pastor's going to go into it today or not, we were talking about the role of women in the holy cause of liberty. And unfortunately, our history doesn't really teach the roles that women played. You hear about Madison, his wife during the War of 1812. You know, what was her name? Molly. Was it Molly Pitcher, too? I think that was the other one, but throughout history, women, and I don't have my Bible with me, but if you go to Nehemiah, there was a guy, he just had daughters, so they started working on the wall. We get real firm here when we talk about women shouldn't be in the military and shouldn't be fighting, in those roles. The thing about the Afghan pilots and the women, we shouldn't be training them. And I understand that biblically, but role reversal is not always written in stone. Just like, the dietary laws of the Bible, it's not written in stone. The Ten Commandments are written in stone, so you obey those. But nowhere in the Ten Commandments does it say that a woman shall not kill. A woman shall not protect innocent life. It doesn't say that. It says thou, which means both of us, both genders that God created, the men and the women. And a lot of times in this movement, people get caught up in the machoism of it and forget to train their women. Forget that, especially if their only unit that they have is their family unit, they've got to make sure that the women in the family that are old enough and capable, let's say capable, and you as the priest of your household will know that, you'll have to do that. During the American War for Independence, there were several cases of young ladies that did the Mulan thing, you know, did the Joan of Arc thing. They wrapped themselves up, dressed up as men, and went into combat and weren't discovered until they were wounded. There's one case where two sisters, I think it was in Gloucester, captured a British spy. They dressed as men. They only had one rifle between them, so they went and they got sticks and put them in the bushes. They heard this rider was coming through, and they ambushed him. And when he saw these sticks sticking through the bushes in the darkness, he thought it was a militia unit, and it was just two sisters. And they bound and gagged him, you know, got his equipment and got his paperwork, and he didn't realize there were women until he was turned over to the regular army. Women can play a key role, and they will. What was it, J.L., who nailed that king's head to the ground with a tent peg. Now, if that isn't combat, I don't know what is. There's so many roles for women to play that go beyond, hey, well, you can just be the nurse and the lady who makes sure that my socks are clean and that my ghillie suit's all brushed out. Don't get stuck in that loop, guys. And you're going to see when you come here for conference, those of you that are going to be here, you're going to see women training beside their husbands, daughters with their brothers. It's going to be awesome. We've got to make sure that we don't neglect the martial training of the women. While you're doing whatever it is you're doing, protecting the barn or out hunting and gathering or doing a raid on a listening post that you've been asked to shut down, what's going to happen if bad guys fall behind the lines and attack your family? Because what does the other side always do? They target our women and children. That's our weakness, their strength. It's not a righteous strength, but our weakness is we love our children, we love our wives, and that's our weakness. What did Sherman do? He attacked the women and children. Had the Southerners trained their women and children, and I'm not Monday morning quarterbacking them, but it's a fact, had trained them to fight, maybe Sherman would have been slowed down. Maybe a few more bluebellies would have bled out on Southern soil. Maybe it comes down to just the cold, hard fact that if they're going to take my wife and my daughter, I want them to go down fighting, and I want them to kill as many of the dirty SOBs as they can so that they are not taken and defiled. You know, you look at the stories of what the Union troops did to women, what the border raiders from Kansas did to the Southern women. Do you want your wife or your daughter to fall that fate? I would hope not. You've got to go forward, and you've got to really pay. I say gotta a lot. I notice when I listen to these. You have to. It is your duty to train your women to shoot and fight. Now, if they're dragging their feet and they just refuse to, I pray for you, brother. Two, if they try to and they just don't get it. I mean, I've got men that I know that I've trained and trained and trained and trained. They're just not going to get it. So, you know, let them be stretcher bearers, let them be logistics people, whatever. You know, you put people where they need to be. But everyone that's capable should be trained in how to shoot, scoot, clear stoppages. They have to be able to be trained to think tactically. If they, you know, even if it's as simple as teaching them to shoot and flee. Shoot and flee. Teach them where the rally points are. Include them in the stuff. Don't neglect your women. Women throughout history have been great warriors. It's the exception, not the rule. Oh, that squeaky scared me. Pastor just walked in the door. I have to oil the door. It caught me off guard there. So don't neglect that part of your family training. One of the things that we were discussing last night, the pastor wants us to do something that we've never done before. We're going to have children, have an obstacle course for the children. We're going to have a firearm safety course for the children. We're going to have, of course, the children can take part in any of the other classes, like the medical classes or things, as long as they're attentive and they understand. But you need to focus on the little kids. They often get neglected in these things, and they kind of tend to run around rampant, and, you know, they'll distract from everything. But when you're doing your trainings as a family, incorporate everybody into it. As the person by default, by choice, whatever, you become the trainer, you have to look at the whole family unit and come up with things that they can do. Because even a small child can do something. Even if it's just holding something. Even if it's you give them a flashlight and you tell them to put it somewhere and you train them to do that, that's fine. You train them to have their little pack, their responsibility, and you tell them to follow. You know, if you have to tie your kids together, you do that. But you've got to come up with a plan, and you got to do it now. Don't wait till the chaos of a disaster, the chaos of conflict, you know, an invasion or whatever it'll be. And we don't pretend to know what's going to happen here. Don't wait till then to grab your kids and have to do the airplane thing and slap them a few times to get them to obey. That's not being a good parent. That's not being a good leader. Stress them out a little bit camping, stress them out a little bit in training, and ease them along. And you can make it a game, but it's still got to be serious. You don't want it goofy. You don't want it falling apart. You know, we're like, you know, a pillow fight or something. But have goal-oriented, skill-oriented tasks that you can do with everyone in your family. The men, the women, the children, the elderly. Don't forget about the elderly. There's a role for everybody in this. So just keep that in mind. And as we get closer to the conference and we share with you more about what we're going to do, you'll get an idea and a taste of the kind of things that we're going to do here. And it is our hope that you will come here, you know, as far away as you possibly can come from. You will go through these classes. You will see how we have a whole family approach to it. It's the way the church works here. We don't have, you know, children's group and teens Sunday school. Everybody's in the church together because we work as a family unit. And hopefully you can take that back to whatever it is you're doing, whether it be your church, your militia, just your family group, your 3 to 5 families, you're doubling up. That's what you're going to be able to do. Well, you've been listening to Stronghold Radio. I'm Dutch Jones. Don't go anywhere. We got a second hour with Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell. And I don't know what he's going to be talking about, but it's always good. And tell your friends and stay right where you're at. We'll be right back.
He's fighting for his nanny dear, his sword is buckled on. He's fighting for his own true love. His foes he does defy. He is the darling of my heart, my southern soldier boy.
You held your head high, trying to win the victory. You fought for
hopes, but you didn't die in vain. Even though you lost, they speak highly of your name. 'Cause you fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb. You fought all the way, Johnny Reb. I heard your teeth chatter from the cold outside. Saw the bullets soaking up the wounds in your side. I saw the young boys as they began to fall. You had tears in your eyes, 'cause you couldn't help it all. But you fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb. You fought all the way, Johnny Reb. I saw General Lee raise a saber in his hand. Heard the cannons roar as you made your last stand. You marched into battle with the gray and the red. When the cannon smoke cleared, took days to count the dead. 'Cause you fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb. You fought all the way, Johnny Reb. When Honest Abe heard the news about your fall, the folks thought he'd call a great victory ball. But he asked the band to play the song Dixie for you, Johnny Reb, and all that you believe. 'Cause you fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb. Yeah, you fought all the way, Johnny Reb. You fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb. You fought all the way, Johnny Reb.
If you're in the battle for the Lord and right, just keep on the fight and right. If you win the battle, surely you must fight, so keep on the fight and right. Keep on the
folks, you're tuned in to Stronghold Radio from Camp Cahuilla, the church at Cahuilla, Cahuilla, California, nestled right. If California had a belly button, this is where it would be. Right outside the southern gate, the main entrance of Sequoia National Park, you will find the little commonwealth of Cahuilla, and here lies a church. And we have a pastor named Pastor Warren Mark Campbell, who just stepped out. He forgot his materials. That's okay. It happens all the time to all of us. Not just some of the times, it happens all the time to me. He's just run down to the church. He'll be here in a couple minutes. I'm going to fill in. And I want to thank all of our people that are streaming our signal for tuning in. Don't go anywhere. Practical Christianity will be here and running up in just a couple of minutes. It's live today. It is the 14th of July, 2011. And so don't go anywhere. You're in the right place at the right time, or if you're listening somewhere on a podcast, you can fast forward through me if you want to. I don't know how long it'll take till the pastor gets here. He's going to be giving a sermon on To Teach Them War, the doctrine of teaching our children to fight, which is kind of the unofficial theme of our conference this year. Our conference will be October 1st and 2nd. We're going to take a holistic approach to training the entire family. Those folks that have been to the past 15 conferences, that are used to sitting in and listening to speakers and that the time's over for that. We that's done. We're done just giving you information. Last year we had Chuck Baldwin and great speakers from around the world, and people didn't really respond. They like the speakers. They're like, yeah, this is great. Well, what we're gonna do now, we're done feeding your brain. You know, there'll still be some speakers, Pastor Weaver and the pastor will speak, and we'll have some people, but we're going to focus on occupying for Christ and being tactically aware, being a prepper, surviving, training, and we're going to be having all kinds of stuff on the field. We'll have classes. If you can't participate in the physical part of it, we're not excluding our elderly, we're not excluding our young. We're going to have things going on in the church that you can just sit and watch if that's what you want to do, and listen and take notes. We'll be having classes for the ladies. We have a really good class this year. We have, if you listen on Tuesday nights, Steve Klein, his wife, and I forgot her name. Help me out here, Stacy. I just call her Mrs. Klein. She's going to be teaching a class because she's in a unique position. Her husband and her son have both come back from severe combat situations, and she has to live with them and deal with them. It's going to be a class on how ladies can support their warriors, their sons and their husbands. It's going to be an awesome biblically based class. Lorraine is her name. Lorraine Klein will be teaching that class. We're still trying to get the lady to come in and teach how to make cottage cheese and all that kind of stuff, and sour cream and all kinds of stuff. We'll be teaching a canning class for the ladies. But at the same time, we're going to offer our classes in basic and intermediate pistol for the ladies. Combat medicine. It's actual combat medicine. This isn't going to be a first aid and CPR class. This is going to be how to treat people with gunshot wounds, insults to the body caused by destructive devices, and that's being taught by Steve Klein's son, who is a decorated combat veteran, a medic from Afghanistan, Bosnia, and Iraq. I may be wrong about Iraq. It may just be, I can't remember, but he's still in. He's currently active duty, and he's taking the time off to train civilians. And then we're going to be having a class on prospecting, cell warfare. I'll be teaching a class this year for the children. It's a modified NRA class on firearm safety. I'm not going to have Eddie the Eagle. I just can't, unless I can get Lou to wear the Eagle outfit. I don't think we're going to do that. We can't afford the Eagle outfit. And then we're going to have an obstacle course with, like, Nerf guns for the little kids. We're going to, you know, time them and give them some team-building skills. Working with people outside their family unit, you know, and we can all cheer them on and everything. I'll be teaching along with, we're going to have soldiers, active duty soldiers, reserve soldiers, veterans, wounded warriors here. We're going to be training in pistol. I'll be teaching the basic pistol, and then I think Pastor John Weaver is going to be doing the intermediate pistol on the other range. There's going to be, for those of you that have been here before, don't worry about it. We're not going to get rid of our, and I hate calling it this, but this is what the public knows, that it's Civil War dance. I call it the War of Northern Aggression dance, where they do the spinning and the calling, and we'll be doing that. The ladies will be dressed up, the men in their white gloves. You can wear whatever uniform you want, but if you wear a Union uniform, you're going to get razzed. Nobody's going to shoot you or anything. We had remember when Roe showed up and he was wearing the Northern uniform? He was wearing a Northern Cavalry uniform. I just kept calling him Butcher and walking away, but he took it well. We'll be doing that. The different thing this year is we're not going to feed you. We just, it's too much logistics on the ladies, and we want them to participate in the classes. And I know I'm forgetting some classes. It's just bring your food, camp out on the field. Look at this as a rendezvous. Look at this as a rally point, as a way to test your gear. Because we know that of the 300 people that come to this thing traditionally every year, they, even though you haven't made the commitment, we know that in the back of your mind you're thinking, well, I can always go to the church at Kauai if something goes bad. Well, we're looking for a commitment. We're looking for people to want to take part in it. Now, they're going to charge $100 a family. $100 a family. I don't know what a family means. The brochures will go out soon. It'll be $100 for the family to come out and do all that. Because some of these presenters are doing it for free. Some of them we have to pay. We've got some... I don't even know who all the instructors are going to be, but we need to reimburse them for their gas money and things like that. John Weaver's flying out from Atlanta, Georgia, and so we'd like to be able to pay for that. There will be a book room this year. I don't know. I think Stacy's going to set up a booth for Stacy Surplus, where we have special price stuff, militia stuff, survival stuff. We'll definitely be selling water filters. If nothing else, we'll be selling water filtration systems. But you'll be able to come up camp. You'll be able to come up and... there'll be a couple houses available. First come, first serve, you can sleep in. I highly recommend you don't get a hotel room. If only to save the money. It's like $85, $100 a night for a hotel room. But camp out with us. Now's the time to start sharpening your survival skills, your everybody's talk. I run into so many people. It's my biggest fit with the militia movement in California. I can't talk about it anywhere else because I don't meet eye to eye with them. So if you're listening outside, I'm not insulting you. I'm not even insulting the militia in California. But what I'm getting sick of is the ones that I meet, they get all the gear in the garage, they go to the range, but they never get dirty, they never get muddy, they never fellowship with other people, and you've got to get over that. You've got to bust that bubble. I know why you do it. It's embarrassing. What if you don't know what you're doing? What if you don't like what the training is? Well, even if it's training that goes against what you've been taught, you know, if you're a veteran or something, you can take something from it. So it's paramount that these little militias all around us, you know, from Los Angeles, San Francisco, because that's all we know are little militias, 3 and 5 guys, 15 guys, a couple families that call themselves a militia, and that's fine. We here at the Church of Cahuilla, from the 90s till now, I think the militia is basically me, Lou, and the pastor. So however many people you have in your group, you get here for the conference, the first weekend in October, first and second of October. It's going to be about $100, we think. Look, flyers are going to go out. Pastor just walked in. We're going to go to a quick break. Yeah, get ready. Why don't we play the theme song, and Pastor can get ready, and we'll be right back with Practical Christianity. And from what I understand, you're going to be doing your To Teach Them War. This is To Teach Children to Fight. This is going to be an amazing teaching. If you haven't, if you got a way to record it, do it now, or you know, because I don't know if we're going to be able to archive it today. But this is something that you're gonna want to share with others. So stay tuned to Stronghold Radio. Pastor Warren Mark Kim will be up after this song.
Brother, keep on the foreign line. Keep on the foreign line. Time is getting short. Jesus coming soon. Brother, keep on the foreign line. There are many dangers everyone must face. If you die fighting, there is no disgrace. With the Lord for cowards, you will find no place. So keep on the foreign line. Brother, keep on the foreign line. Keep on the foreign line. Time is getting short. Jesus coming soon, brother, keep on the foreign line. God can only use the soldiers he can trust to keep on the foreign line. If you wear the crown, bear the cross, you must. So keep on the foreign line. Brother, keep on the foreign line. Keep on the foreign line. Time is getting short. Jesus coming soon, brother, keep on the foreign line. Brother, keep on the foreign line. Time is getting short. Jesus coming soon. Brother, keep on the foreign line.
That's Keep on the Firing Line, and that means one thing and one thing only. Thank you for tuning in. It is Thursday, which, of course, it's time for Practical Christianity. If you're listening on 93.3 FM, Vice Chair Radio, thank you for tuning in, and all of our listeners on the web. We really appreciate you tuning in on Indiana Freedom Talk Radio, Liberty Tree Radio, Militant Christian View Radio in Dundee, New York, and all other points in between. Without further ado, here's Pastor Warren Mark Campbell.
Good afternoon, Dutch and Lewis, and good evening and good afternoon to all you folks out there. As I was walking in this evening, I was going to go down a different line, and I heard Dutch talking about there in his last few remarks about children and the importance of training children. And the Lord had been mulling in my mind a little bit about this, a message about training our and teaching our children to fight. And so I thought, I told Dutch at the break, I said, you know what, I'm gonna go down that line, because I just, hearing you talk about it, mm-hmm. and I was had it in my mind, I think it's important, especially today, because we don't have that many more opportunities to train our children to fight. So let's begin to look at that in the Word of God. This is Practical Christianity, and so that's where we're going to go. We want to go to the book of Judges, Judges chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, and let's begin to look real quickly at this concept of training and teaching our children to fight. Now these are the nations which the Lord left to prove Israel by them, even as many of Israel had not known all the wars of Canaan. So you got children that were growing up that did not know the Canaanite wars. They did not see the Canaanite battles. All right. Verse 2, only that the generations of the children of Israel might know to teach them war, at least such as before knew nothing thereof. So here's children coming on, they're getting older, and they didn't know Dutch about the wars of Canaan. So God says, I'm leaving certain people in the land so that these other new generations come up can learn the art of war, learn the art of discipline, and be able to function in a militaristic fashion. Because as one of my favorite things I like to do at the church at Kaweah, folks, when I'm teaching to my local people, is to ask them, what is the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear the word militant? And of course, they know from Webster's 1828 dictionary that Noah Webster says under the word militant, it's the church, which is distinguished from the church triumphant, which is in heaven. So those are loved ones that have gone on before. Mm-hmm. They're part of the church triumphant now. But everybody that's alive here on terra firma, on the earth today, they are part of the church militant. Webster's, you can look that up in Webster's 1828 dictionary. So there's an aspect of militancy which we need to know and understand, and then impart that to our children. And so this is a principle that's being taught here, folks, in Judges 3:2, that the generations of the children of Israel might know to teach them war. So we need to be able to teach our children war. So I want to quote to you and show you that this is not something that Pastor Warren Campbell is some kind of a radical here. Yeah, this is nothing new. I'm going to quote from John Gill. He's a Bible Baptist commentator from the 1700s, Dutch. And this is what he says concerning this passage here in Judges 3, 1 and 2, concerning verse 2. Only that the generations of the children of Israel might know and teach them war. This is John Gill now, not Pastor Warren Mark. That is, the following nations were left in the land that the young generations of Israel might by their wars and conflicts learn the art of war, mm-hmm. and be inured to martial discipline. See, that's what the church needs, to be inured or be comfortable with martial discipline. It's something we don't understand really anymore, the concept of we are in a battle. He says, which if none had been left to engage with, they had been ignorant of. In other words, if you don't have any battles out there, you're not taught, you just don't know the art of war unless you're taught it. Yeah. It's something that you need to be taught with.
You need that stress.
And so, learn the art of war. Why, folks? Why should we learn the art of war? Number one, if we know the sin nature of man, we know that men want to oppress others. Yeah. That there are evil men and women out there with wicked intentions. They're in positions of high power, highest positions of power. And if we don't resist them, there'll be problems. So, number two, the New World Order is a reality, and we believe that the New World Order is ungodly. We believe that the New World Order is tyrannical, and they want to stamp out the vestiges of Christianity that are left in our land. So that's a good reason to train martially. Also, I think because of the problems on our border, Dutch, it's good to have martial discipline and martial training, because our enemies across our borders have said what they want to do with America and how they want to take so much of it back. They make no, you can go on any website, Atzlan or a Bronze America, and you can see what they have to
Brown
say.
Pride,
you can see what they have to say concerning what they want to do with America. So Gill says that we need to learn the art of war, and we need to be inured to martial discipline. That's something we'll talk about that a little bit more. And he says, and so be capable of teaching their children the military art, teaching children how to fight. Now, not everybody's been in the military. I don't have a military background. I have a martial arts background. But whatever background we have, we want to teach that to our children. Maybe we did some boxing in college and can teach our kids a few things about that. Let's say you don't have hardly any of a martial background at all. Well, then you get private tutors in. You bring in instructors to teach you, your wife, and your children the art of war, the art of self-defense. So there's no excuse. Some of us have a better militant background than others. But if we had no militant background, and let's say you spent 30 years in a pacifist church and never did anything, well, then you have a responsibility to seek out training. Go to some of the local dojos in your community and see that your children begin to learn some martial disciplines. It'll help them a number of different ways besides just in the area of self-defense. So Gill goes on to say that they might be trained up and so also be capable of teaching their children the military art, which they should make use of in obeying the command of God, by driving out the remains of the Canaanites and not give themselves up to sloth and indolence. if we aren't training, we're all apt to give ourselves to sloth and indolence. It's just the human nature to be a bit lazy. And so if we have martial discipline before our eyes and we know that it's something we need to teach our children, then we step out of the area of sloth and indolence. I'll give an example. I was just talking to a lady last night or the night before about a homeschooling. She was asking about homeschooling our children. And I mentioned that for our children, music was a big part of our curriculum. So that both of my two adult children, Dutch, play, as you know, several different instruments,
right,
because we emphasize that in the curriculum. Had I do it over again, I would still emphasize highly for our Christian education, for the Campbell home, a very strong musical background with training in instrumentation, of learning of instruments. I would continue that, but I would also add, even to a greater degree than I did with my grown son and daughter, martial discipline and martial arts training, especially because of the hour in which we live. And so that behooves me to train them into the way that of the things that I know, and the areas that I don't know, bring in instructors like we do here at the church at Kaweah, and invite people to learn. So here we see John Gill with this passage in Judges 3, 1 and 2. He's talking about the fact that children need to be taught. And I like that. I think that's something we can take to heart, that it's not something new, but it's something that's been in Christianity for a long time, Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
So it has deep roots. Let me quote to you from The Life and Character of the Civil Institutions of the United States by Benjamin Morris. He says this, quote, "One of the moral maxima of the New England Puritans," now we're going back to the 1600s, 1700s in America, "is that they may lawfully," note their wording here, I'm quoting, "that they may lawfully, under the New Testament," not just Old Testament principles, folks, New Testament. You know, one of the Adams said, if you want to understand, I believe it was Samuel Adams, why we're breaking with Great Britain, he says, "Study the New Testament and the teachings of Jesus Christ, because they're clearly written and promulgated in the Word of God, the lessons of liberty," you know, and that understanding. So our founding fathers had a real strong understanding of this. He says, "The New England Puritans, that they may lawfully under the New Testament wage war upon just and necessary occasions. For this end, they kept up for generations the most rigid military discipline and were ready at all times to repel invaders." So here's part of the Puritan theology, and they're known for their work ethic, was also their martial ethic, was to say, we need to have discipline. We need to continue with military discipline. This union of the military and Christian spirit was transmitted to their descendants and was ready for earnest action when the great war of the Revolution broke out. They also, and we go back as far as Jamestown in 1607, they had what was called as laws martial. If you didn't come to a public meeting with your weapon in hand, and you didn't train with your weapon, you could be fined. Because
it's like a sergeant at arms would make sure you were armed instead of disarmed.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So we have a strong heritage here, not just here in the 21st century, but in the 1600s, 1700s, of understanding this. Richard Henry Lee, one of our founding fathers, he wrote, "To preserve liberty, it is essential that the whole body of people always possess arms and be taught alike, especially when young, how to use them."
Yeah.
So, Dutch, let's emphasize, this was in 1788. Let's emphasize for a minute what Founding Father Richard Henry Lee said, that we need to have the body of people possess arms and be taught how to use them, especially when young. Now, let's just break that down, and if you have some comments here, feel free.
Sure.
But
I'm listening.
Young... I'm thinking about the fact that I took my son to Front Sight and other places for training when he was a teenager.
Yeah.
And so he excels me because I was doing these things when I was in my, late 30s and early 40s and into my 50s. I'm still doing them.
There's a time frame when you train a young man at anything, whether it's track and field,
yes,
building a fence, splitting logs, that they get it.
Quick.
And it goes deep into their roots, and they become proficient at it. And then, like myself, trying to learn something at 45, 46, it's not going to go as deep. It's like watering a tree, you know.
It doesn't go as deep, and it's harder to retain. So therefore, I noticed when we had the gentleman from Alaska, Larry Wick, here, Lou was remembering some of the techniques, and we were relying upon Lou.
I still do.
To a couple of the hand techniques that he was teaching, because he's in his teens, and he's got that mind that remembers.
Yeah.
And so too with my son Warren Luke, He remembered the technical data. They remember the technical data, and so we have to rely upon them. So, folks, what we're saying is the children absorb it much better. It's like children learning a foreign language at 6, 7, 8 years of age. Yeah. They pick up a foreign language so much quicker than we can in our 40s
and 50s. That's
the
way God designed them, to be programmed at those ages. I don't mean programmed in a negative sense, but literally to be embedded with the knowledge.
Their minds are so sharp, and so this is what's going on here in Judges chapter 3 and verse 2, is the children of Israel, the children needed to know war because there had been a time when there hadn't been war, yeah, and we needed to pass on those skills to those that are coming up down the line. And so Richard Henry Lee says, teach your children at a young age, and the obvious reasons are is because they retain so much better. I memorized poetry as a young man, and I still have the poems that I memorized at 12, 13 in my teens into my early 20s. They're still at the top of my tongue. If I try to memorize them now at 50, I have to go over them much more. Yeah. And then in a few years, I cannot retain them, the whole body of it, like I can the ones that I memorized when I was a teenager. And so that's why this principle, folks, of teaching our children to fight is so important. That's laid out here in Judges 3, 1, and 2. Now, Matthew Henry, he was also a commentator from the 1700s, and he wrote about this passage as well. He said, quote, "If Israel were not made to know hardship, Israel would be in danger of sinking into the utmost degree of luxury,
yeah,
and effeminacy." And what we have in America is we have a very effeminate church. It's extremely effeminate. Now, we have men that are very good in the church world, that maybe are great basketball players, very coordinated. Maybe they're very good at track and field. There's a lot of sports, you know, or maybe great at football and be athletes that way. But they're effeminate mentally.
Right.
They've gone to an effeminate side. I like to refer to from time to time the minister that used to be in this area here a number of years ago, and he said he had a special forces background in Vietnam. And when I asked him why he didn't come to one of our special services, we were friends, he said, well, because I heard that they were taking down license plates. Folks, this goes back to license plate numbers. Yeah. This goes back to our circa 1993. That's not going on right now. But in 1993, 4, we were having a big stir here.
The Clinton era.
And so he said he was scared to come to the Church of Queen. Now, this is an ex-special forces guy, big, burly guy, saying, I'm afraid to come to the Church of Queen because they might take down my license plate. So while he had a background of martial training, was skilled at one time 20, 30 years before, in his mind he was still effeminate. The church had effeminized his mind. And so I think Matthew Henry's hitting it right on right here when he says, if Israel were not made to know hardship through training, through the pull-ups, through the push-ups, through the drilling that we undergo, and we can undergo that with our young people, and I encourage parents, if they're old enough, train along with your young people as much as possible.
Do the best you can.
And because the children respect you for that. Going back to the music illustration, Dutch, I remember a couple of times my dad tried to get my brother and I to learn the piano. But he didn't pay for a piano teacher. He bought several different books and said, okay, now you sit down at the piano and learn.
It's tough.
It doesn't work. And so he needed to get us week in and week out to a piano teacher regularly. Or the next step better, with the instruments that I was teaching my children, my wife had never played an instrument until she was about 35.
Oh.
Yeah, first time, somewhere in there. In her 30s, she picked up the clarinet because my wife and I and my two children at that time went to learn music lessons together.
Just played together.
Yeah. And so that's, by the way, folks, I'm all over the map here a little bit, but why homeschooling is so important is because it also trains us as adults. We review history. When we're teaching our children, we review mathematics, English, some of these things, and it doesn't hurt any of us as parents
to
get a little bit more skill in terms of our acumen, or be exposed to new stuff. Yeah. And so there's homeschooling has benefits just for the children as well as the parents teaching.
Yeah.
You know, and so we don't want an effeminate Christianity, and that's what we have here, and that's why churches like ours and free churches are so small, Dutch, is because the church world's so effeminate. They don't know that in 1828, Noah Webster, when he said militant, he said when we think of militant, we're to think of the church militant, which is to be against its enemies here on the earth, opposed to the church triumphant. So the modern church has no concept, and there's good people out there, they love the Lord, but they have no concept of militant Christianity.
Or as I say, fat, dumb, and happy.
And they enjoy being fat, dumb, and happy.
Yeah.
And so when we teach our children, there's an aspect here, Matthew Henry says, of to know hardship. or will be danger of sinking into the utmost degree of luxury and effeminacy. Now, Matthew Henry went on to say here about this passage in Judges, he continued to say, the art of war is best learned by experience, which not only acquaints men with martial discipline, but inspires them with a martial disposition. Now, I've hinted on that, Dutch, and that's where I want to spend a few minutes here on what Matthew Henry calls...
Do you want to take a break or keep going, sir? We can take a break or...
You want? Let's just keep going. Maybe
I like
because,
that idea.
Yeah, because I got in. I jumped in late, folks, so we'll just keep going here. Maybe take a few break here at the towards the end.
Sure.
But Matthew Henry says, and he's basing this upon his understanding of Judges 3, 1, and 2, that we need to teach martial discipline and martial disposition. Martial disposition. So let's talk about what it means on training our boys and girls concerning martial disposition and martial discipline. I think of the story of Kerry McNeil and John Redding in the at the time of the Civil War, and actually the War of Northern Aggression. And this couple had been engaged to be married, and this guy is going to lose, I can't remember, Dutch, if it was his leg, he's going to lose his leg or lose his arm, lose his leg, I think. And in those days, it was going to mean it was going to be very hard for he and his new wife to make a living, because they didn't have the prosthesis that they have today that works so well. And so he went in just before the operation, and he said, honey, I'm releasing you from this vow of commitment, because I'm going to have one leg, and you know, and I'm not going to be able, it's going to be hard for me to make a living for our family.
He was thinking of her.
He was thinking of her. And so, and of course, in those days when you got engaged to be married, it was
a major deal.
It was very serious. And so she leaves the room, and she has this big smile on her face, and the relatives thought that she was probably going to turn him down, because it was going to be so hard to make a living now, and she was going to have to work so much harder. But she said, I love him so much more now that he's lost a limb in what she called her holy cause of liberty, the cause of the South. And so this is this concept of martial disposition and martial thinking, that even our young ladies need to have martial thinking. Now, we're not training them in the same sense as we're training the young men for war, because we're training the young men to protect the women, mm-hmm. to protect the girls, to protect the older ladies, to protect the older men. So we're training our young men to protect the weaker vessel, if you would, but at the same time, the weaker vessel is very capable of obtaining martial discipline and disposition as well.
Sure.
Last night, as you recall, Dutch, I don't know if you got into this on the show, on the Wednesday night Bible study, we talked about women of the American Revolution.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, who fought. They had martial discipline. But the women of the American Revolution also had martial disposition. And there was a group in Pennsylvania who pledged that many of these young ladies that were unmarried got together and said, we're not going to marry anybody who did not fight for the militia or did not fight in the Continental Army, because we don't want our children to be cowards and traitors to the cause of liberty. And so as they said, we're not going to marry anybody that didn't get involved.
Right.
And I thought, boy, that how good that is, how wise that is. So these women themselves, now they're not on the front line, or they didn't pick up muskets, but they had martial disposition, mm-hmm. you know, and they were wanting to give aid. As a matter of fact, part of our church covenant, which is a statement of our church belief, Dutch, we write in it on it's a statement, folks, that we have prepared years ago of the of our beliefs as the church, and it's under the category the right to bear arms and the right to defense. And some of you have maybe heard this quote this before. Quote, we affirm and declare the scriptures teach there is a time for war. We affirm and declare that when God calls his people to wage war, it is a sin to be passive or to refuse to defend the just cause. Now here it is. We affirm and declare it is the duty of all women in the body to give aid, comfort, and support of good and lawful Christian men engaged in such war for God, family, and this body. Mm-hmm. So in the American Revolution and the time of the War of Northern Aggression, I have a book called The Women of the Confederacy. They had that martial disposition. They had that martial spirit, and they encouraged their men in the battle because they felt it was a righteous battle, and so they went to great lengths to keep their men encouraged, even though almost all did not fight on the lines. There was a few women that did. They still had a martial disposition,
and that's a serious role to play.
Yeah,
it can't be belittled, saying, well, that's just, you know, they're promising to marry, they're promising no, it's huge.
It's
The men on the front line, when they know that, it's going to encourage them, it's going to work on their morale, it's going to show them that they are indeed fighting for a just cause.
Exactly. So what is martial disposition? Let's see, bear it out a little more scripturally. We could find that in 1 Samuel chapter 17. if somebody wants to look it up, they can, but I'm not going to go there, Dutch, because we actually spent a couple of weeks ago on David and Goliath, the story of David and Goliath, and that's 1 Samuel 17. You see David as a young man there because of his faith in God. He's been out watching the sheep. He says, I slew a bear, I slew a lion. He already has martial disposition and discipline, and he's never spent a day in the military.
Yeah.
But he learned. It was a way of life.
Up until 150 years ago, maybe 100 years ago even, it was a way of life for young men to go out and hunt and shoot and protect their farm and their livestock.
So they already had martial disposition and a little bit of martial training, even if they didn't know it, because his dad had passed on to David, and that's what this is, the militia concept, like in that we have in Switzerland today and that we have within certain segments of Christianity, especially our, here at the Church of Kauai and others that we know, Dutch, is that we pass on the skills to our children. So David was it was very good with the sling. Did he just pick that up on his own? More than likely, his dad taught him how to use a sling, and then he excelled in it. The dad would teach the son how to use the sword. The dad would teach the son the use of the bow and arrow. And so these are skills that we pass on, which give. So David, when he fought Goliath, he was not a skilled warrior. Remember, he put on the weapons of that day, tried a sword and the coat of mail that the king Saul had. He said, I haven't proved these. I haven't assayed these weapons. I got to go with what I know, and that's a slingshot.
Yeah.
You know, and it ended up being a very good weapon to fight the giant with. So David had martial disposition, but we also want to inure, as Matthew Henry says, in our children, martial discipline. I'm going to go now to 1 Chronicles chapter 12 and look at this concept of martial discipline. 1 Chronicles chapter 12. And we'll begin reading verse 32 to about 38. 32 to 38. This is now on teaching martial discipline. And the children of Israel, by the way, as we go to 1 Chronicles 12, 32, some of you want to, if you don't have a Bible, write it down. If you can memorize it, 1 Chronicles 12, 32. 1 Chronicles 12, 32. This is a very important verse. It was one my dad went to all the time, Dutch. And the children of Issachar, and the children of Issachar, which were men that had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do.
Right.
What a great verse. John Weaver at the conference in October, I haven't even told you, Dutch, he's going to be delivering a message when it is time. Because he's always asked, people are asking him all the time as he travels around the United States, when is it time? So he reversed it and said, he's going to be speaking, folks, when it is time. So that's what I tell people a lot when they say, well, when is it time? I say, well, not only will I know, and you probably know, but God will put it upon the hearts. I'm not sure which direction John's going with his message, but God will put it on the hearts of men that it now is the time to do certain things that we'll get into at another lesson. And the children of Israel, of Issachar, which were men that had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do. But I can tell you what, right now, folks, if you ask me concerning this debt limit ceiling debate, I know what Israel ought to do. I know what America ought to do. Mm-hmm. And so do some of the other Tea Party congressmen and women. They know what needs to be done. All right? The heads of them were 200, and all their brethren were at their commandment. So Issachar had some men that understood as they're approaching a battle here what it is that Israel needed to do. Verse 33. Of Zebulun, such as went forth to battle, expert in war, with all instruments of war, 50,000 which could keep rank, they were not of double heart. So here you have a double heart is you don't have a martial disposition. You're wavering, you're vacillating, you want to get out of there, you know, run from the enemy
your
as quick as possible.
Elsewhere.
Your mind is elsewhere. And so it says they also could keep rank. This is martial discipline, and this is what we want to train for so we don't panic. You'll recall, Dutch, a few years ago, we had one of our instructors come out, and when we were doing a handgun class, we shot at about 2 yards away our targets, and nobody knew what was behind the target.
Yeah.
But the instructor had prepared an elixir of ketchup and
cottage
cheese and cream cheese and water, so that when we engaged the cranial ocular cavity, it would splatter all over us. I mean, I've still got the stains on my equipment from on my web gear, my vest, from all that matter, which would actually which was facsimile of pia matter, from a head wound on us to see, and we could look back on the video, and we saw where a couple people, when they got splattered with all that, they turned, as
they
you
freaked
said,
out.
They freaked out, they turned their gun, and didn't keep it downrange.
Yeah.
So this is what we're talking about, folks, here, about some martial discipline. And we all, you know, this is not picking on anybody, because we all, that's what we have training for. So we, the instructor says, hey, next time you get a bunch of pia matter in your face because somebody's, you know, had, something was blown all over you, keep in the fight. Don't freak out.
Yeah. Don't lose focus.
Don't lose focus. So that's why we have this kind of training. So he says, now, and this is the tribe of Zebulun. They were thousands of, they were acquainted with all instruments of war. That means they could handle sword, bow, staff, whatever it would be. 50,000 which could keep rank. They knew how to set the battle in array. That's what they means. They knew how to go left flank, right flank. They knew the maneuvers.
The terminology, right? The execution.
Yeah, exactly. Verse 34, and of Naphtali, 1,000 captains, and with them, with shield and spear, 37,000. And then he talks about the Danites, expert in war, 28,000 with them. And of Asher, such as went forth to battle, expert in war, 40,000. Different numbers, huge numbers in some of these cases for some of the children of Israel. And Reuben, the other side of the Jordan, they went forth to battle. Now, verse 38. All these men of war that could keep rank. Another emphasis here with that concept of being able to stand to in the heat of battle. We were just talking about the American Revolution, Dutch, and I'm thinking about when we talked a few weeks ago about the Battle of Bunker Hill, mm-hmm. or Breed's Hill, and how that we lost the physical battle of Bunker Hill because we our boys repelled the first two charges. They repelled the British. The third charge, they had to fall back. They couldn't hold them.
They ran out of powder and ball.
But we won the moral victory because it proved to the British that coppersmiths and tinsmiths mm-hmm. and cobblers and doctors and lawyers, militia, could stand their ground in the heat of battle.
These were city folk. This was the harbor city of Boston.
Right. These were city
folk. Weren't farmers.
And people wondered, would they keep rank? And we proved to the British that we could keep rank.
Cost the British dearly.
And let me get off on another rabbit trail, because this is what preachers do sometimes, Dutch. But, you know, sometimes, if you hear around American history, they always talk about the militia folding oftentimes in battle. One of the problems the militia had was because, like with General Gates and other English generals, they were so set in their ways of the British way of fighting.
European.
You go out, European style of fighting, you go out and you stand out in the middle of the field and you get so far away and then you just say, everybody says fire, and you
volley
fire.
Volley
after volley.
Ridiculous.
And after the colonials, the militiamen, they knew that was, like you said, that was folly. That was ridiculous.
They were fighting Indians for decades, and they learned how to fight like the
they
Indians.
They learned how to fight Indian style, and now to go out in an open field and just stand there and wait to be shot, that bugged the militiamen.
Yeah.
That was real hard for them to stand there when they said, let's take some cover, man.
Yeah, get behind a tree or a rock.
So when you talk about the militia folding, it's because many of them said, look, I'm not going to stand out here and just, you know, be a duck in a pond for nothing.
Yeah.
This is stupid. And they were trying to respect the general, but the general was being bullheaded and not adopting, you know, and not adopting the Indian style of fighting, which was the superior way at that time.
Right.
And so anyway, we're talking about keeping rank, folks. So verse 38 says, all these men of war that could keep rank came with a perfect heart to Israel and all the rest of Israel, and they had one heart to make David king. All right. So I see we've got about 15 minutes here, so I need to hasten on.
One of the interesting things, you know, you brought up the point about the militia, is that they had been fighting with British troops as British citizens for decades, too, in the French and Indian Wars, and, you know, like the Green Mountain Boys from Vermont and stuff. And they knew the whole time, as they watched the British, as their allies before the American War of Independence, just make mistake after mistake, like Washington, the miracles of Washington. He saw these British generals just get mowed down, and the British never learned their lesson.
The Battle of the Monongahela.
Yes, yes, yeah. Exactly.
Terrible, terrible mistake on the part of the general there, yeah. And George Washington was under him and had to obey the guy's orders,
right.
But he was making mistake after mistake. It was horrible.
So
yeah.
it was a lot of new things. It was a new style of warfare. The Americans were willing to adapt. And the reason I bring that up is every general, every military always fights the last war. It seems like it takes them several years sometimes into a conflict to realize, hey, we're not going to win this way. We got to change our tactics. We saw it in Afghanistan and Iraq. We saw it in Somalia. And they've always got to be static, and they refuse to allow their men to change. They're rigid. It's the dynamic fighters that usually carry the day.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Before time runs out on us, we can always go back, and if you have a question or somebody has a question, we can answer. But I want to get into some practical things here now. We talked about the fact that we need to teach our children the art of war. They need to learn war. They need to be fluent in martial discipline as well as martial disposition. Well, what are some of the practical things that we can do in teaching our children the art of war and give them discipline and disposition? Number one, one of the things you can do, folks, is make sure that your children know all the Word of God. All the Word of God. They need to be familiar with passages such as Psalms 18:34. Blessed be the Lord which teaches my hands to war, you know, and my fingers to fight. Psalm 144:1. Blessed be the Lord which teaches my hands to war and my fingers to fight, so that a bow of steel is broken by mine arms, you know. These martial, there's so many martial militant passages in the scriptures. Make sure your children know them, as well as passages such as turn the other cheek, yeah, and love your neighbor as yourself. Certainly teach all those. But what I'm saying is teach all the Word of God to your children. So that's part of teaching our children to fight. Number two, expose them to military history and the lives of godly leaders such as Oliver Cromwell, Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, Jeb Stuart, on and on and on. Many, many of the great generals that we've had have been extremely godly, pious men. And so their stories are interesting to young ladies as well as the young men as well. So, and you can make them appropriate if you're talking about Robert E. Lee or Stonewall Jackson. They've got books out on Stonewall Jackson for a seven-year-old. And then when they get to their teens, there's a little more heady, a little more information.
Right.
And read them together. Use some of these books, folks, on these great heroes as part of your devotion time and the story reading, you know, to your children in the evening. So expose them. And by the way, when we talk about expose them to military history, Christian military history, I always like to tell Reformed people, if because they have a strong reformational stance, and they talk about their great heritage in the Reformation, if they're not teaching their children the military history of the Reformation, in other words, they teach their children about John Calvin,
yeah,
and they teach them about John Knox and Zwingli and Luther and the doctrines of election and all these things, but are they teaching them the military history of the Reformation? For instance, John Knox, before he became the preacher that he was a bodyguard to Edgar Wisenot. He was an actual at-arms bodyguard of a preacher.
Right.
That's an aspect of the military history of the Reformation. Gustavus Adolphus in the north, coming down, you know, from Sweden, the great military general. So in the Reformation, we have reformers that helped us with our theology and straighten it out and solidify it. But we had martial men that allowed us to keep our theology and stay free. If we didn't have the militant arm of the Reformation, the doctrines that we enjoy today, we'd have lost them to Roman Catholicism and other persecutory people that would have kept us from obtaining these. So we have good reformational doctrines, but we have them because there were militant men during the time of the Reformation. So that's why I'm saying what I'm teaching is not new, folks, today at all. We're talking now, we're going back to the 1500s and 1600s with this concept. All right. So expose them to history. The lives of leaders like Cromwell, Lee, and Jackson, they'll actually bring you to tears, folks, as you study. If you study their lives from a Christian perspective, get a Christian book on the subject of these men, and their piety and their love for the Lord. It's incredible. All right? Number three, teach them any martial or survival skills that you or your wife know.
Yeah.
And we've already talked about that.
That part.
If you had a little boxing in high school, teach it to them. If you had a little martial arts somewhere down the line, teach it to them what you know. If you don't have any of that, or maybe your wife knows some survival skills, teach them what you know. Maybe you're in Boy Scouts. Teach them what you know from your Boy Scouts. You know, go out and camping and teach that. If you don't know very much, then it's easy to get tutors who will come and teach you. And just make that a part of your investment. For, you know, if you have to lay off of the three R's for a little bit, lay off the three R's and get into some of these other skills and put your money out in some of these skills as well. Number four, look at the military and survival catalogs with your children and explain what you see. As father, you need to become quartermaster for your family. Dutch, I'm going to allow you to define what a quartermaster is for the
quartermaster people. Would be the part of the military that was the logistics, supply, everything from underwear to food to beans to bullets. The quartermaster corps used to be critical. Now we've partitioned that out to the civilian
privates.
World. Yeah, now it's Halliburton.
Yeah.
We used to have a quartermaster corps in our military, and the men could count on getting the supplies they needed to the front lines from behind the lines. But being the quartermaster means that you have to decide what your family needs, be a steward of your assets. You don't let your kid just go and maybe flit away their money on an airsoft weapon that's a piece of junk. Make them save up and get something that's a good training aid. And that's personally what the kind of thing we do. Was it today or yesterday? Lou just spent the money he's been earning working clearing brush for training knives and things along those lines so that we can continue our training. He's being wise with his money. So you as the quartermaster should impart on them that type of wisdom and desire.
So yeah, folks, as you're looking, there's lots of, you know, the internet's of course just full. You got Dutch Jones's site for finding things. There's magazines out there like Brigade Quartermaster, HQ from Sportsman's Guide,
Major Surplus and Supply.
Yeah, GI Joe's Major Surplus and Supply. They're out there. You know, there's a whole bunch of them.
Thousands.
And get Dutch's, you know, and go on Dutch's website, and you can get these things so that you have a setup, whether it's, you know, for your field gear is the same.
Basic
it would be
kit.
Good. Basic kits, and you're all kitted out the same. We had a class here a couple of years ago, and I remember Dutch was extremely. You were really impressed with one man who had his teenage sons there, and they were all kitted out the same.
The Badger Militia.
The Badger. Okay, militia. The Badger Militia. So they were kitted out the same, so that they could easily. Everybody knew where the other thing was going to be on the other person's.
Person, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was great training on their part.
So folks, if you don't have some of these quarterlies. Get some of these magazines. Get them coming to your home, and just let the kids, if it's a young boy, just let them thumb through it and enjoy the pictures for a while if he's just a child, you know?
Yeah.
But as they get older, then you need to begin, as quartermaster, you need to begin to purchase these supplies for your home so that, fathers, you become the quartermaster. Talk it over with your wife or whatever, and, you know, let her get her in on it, too, if you want, so that she understands what you're getting for the children, why you're getting it for the children, and, you know, that you have a scriptural mandate to be the quartermaster for your family, to see that they're well supplied and have
what
they need.
And it's fun, too. It's definitely fun to sit around, and it's like making a Christmas list.
Yeah. Cheaper than dirt. Remember that old catalog?
I haven't
seen it for years, but there's Delta Force is out there. Delta Press is out there. Folks, there's just a lot
Cavalry,
of them.
U.S. Cavalry.
Yeah. There's just a whole bunch of them. And so we're not, at, you know, and especially in the days of the internet, folks, they're just everywhere to get good deals on things that we need. Number six. We're talking about practical things now that you can do in helping to train your children and inure them to a martial disposition. Take them to some of the firearms training academies around the country. You know, they're growing up, or get yoked with a church that's having training and bringing it here. So, folks, I don't go as much to the other training camps as I used to. I just was gone in May to Arizona, but I don't go as much as I used to because now we're bringing those men here, and it's easier for it's cheaper for the church folks, and it's, you know, so they don't have to pay the big motel bills and things like that. So some of you may need to consider moving closer to some of these training camps. And so take your children. I've known several couples that actually have spent their it's not your honeymoon, what do you do on your anniversary?
We're
couples for their 30th anniversary, their 20th anniversary, their 15th or 17th anniversary, they will go to a firearms training camp together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not unusual at all in this day and age for a husband and wife on their anniversary to take the kids to go train, shoot with a handgun class for 4 days.
It's good stewardship and leadership.
Yeah. So, and don't forget, folks, that private instructors will come to your property to teach you self-defense, handgun, long gun, and close quarter combat skills. Okay? So, and it may be that maybe you know a guy that an ex-Marine or an ex, or maybe a guy that's currently a Marine or an ex-Special Forces or
They're
something.
All out there.
And you just bring him in to talk to the kids one day and show them some of the stuff, you know, and so that they're comfortable seeing the military accoutrements around the home.
Yeah.
And they've seen a drag bag, and they've seen the load bearing equipment
and
the vest.
You know what a rucksack feels like.
Yeah. And so they're just close, that it's just comfortable with them. It's not foreign to them. And then also, too, folks, a lot of times your wives will get over that fear if they see a lot of the gear. They just see, it's just camp. To them, it's just camping gear.
Yep.
Now, number eight. Let me give you one more important one in training our
seven.
Children.
Did you do seven?
Yeah, that's private instructors.
Yeah,
They'll come to your home. Yeah.
Okay.
Number eight. play and sing martial music in your home. This will also help your wife to get, if she has a little vacillation or if she doesn't have a real martial disposition, martial music. Learn the Christian martial music, King Alfred's war song, that Christians were singing in battle as far back as 900 A.D., you know, that they were singing as they went to battle. This is known as King Alfred's war song. There's Christian songs known as Hearts Courageous, The Battle Belongs to the Lord. Get back into your patriotism, America the Beautiful. I love that clause that says, who more than self their country loved and mercy more than life, Dutch. So this is another way we can instill martial music in the home, is to have these things. The Star Spangled Banner, you know, that's our national anthem is a great song. In the second verse, it says, "O thus may it be, ever when free men shall stand between their loved homes and the war's desolation." You know, we know the first verse of it, but the second verse is even more powerful. Yeah. You know, that free men, that's what we're talking about here. You as a free man or woman on the land, you're standing between your loved home and the war's desolation, you know. Then conquer we must, because our cause is just the Bonnie Blue Flag. If you play, when you hear songs like the Bonnie Blue Flag from the War of Northern Aggression to the War for Christian Liberty, it instills into you. We have the, you know, Keep on the Firing Line. Yeah. That's you guys' theme song. Listening to Keeping on the Firing Line. We haven't heard on Vice Giant Radio lately, Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition.
I think it dropped out. I was telling Lou the other day, we got to find it again. I think when the power went out, sometimes we lose stuff. So yeah, we got to Praise the Lord, Pass the Ammunition. Yeah. That's Stacy's favorite song on there, so you're right.
Christ shall have dominion. So folks, there's lots of militaristic martial songs, and some of them have lyrics that are good. Bird just flew into the window. Yeah, and some are just melodies that you're just hearing the instrumental, but there's something good about hearing martial music
that touches the spirit,
touches our hearts.
And ballads are a great way to teach history. I remember one time I played Lou like every version of Battle of the Alamo we could find, and then we got to talk about what the Battle of the Alamo was. It wasn't just a John Wayne movie, you know. There's more to it.
Ballad of Davy Crockett's a good gets kids, you know, in that frame of mind. So, folks, it is scriptural to teach our. I know we're coming to an end here. It is scriptural to teach our children at a young age, and inure them to martial. Remember those two words: martial disposition. That's thinking martially, and then martial discipline. So you've got two words there: think martially and have martial discipline, and that only comes through training. Folks, training,
and it doesn't have to be regimented training. It can be tasks that you give them every day, observation skills.
I wanted to close with, I didn't want to forget, sometimes we have games. How much time do I got?
We got as much time as we need. We got 4 minutes.
Okay,
if we can go all the way to the end.
Oh, excellent. Okay, there's two more things here, folks, I forgot. Games can be martial oriented. We don't do too many 4th of July things or Independence Day things just because it's too stinking hot, Dutch.
Yeah.
So what we do is New Year's Eve. And on New Year's Eve, you recall, we have a combat relay, combat rig relay we've done. We have the combat diorama where they're having to find little objects in my little military setting. Yeah. And so a couple years ago, what we had
stretcher races.
We had those Nerf guns and going through the fellowship hall. So folks, there's games that you can make, especially with the younger children. You can do martial games and teach them a little bit. And then lastly, live before your children, coram Deo. Mm. That is, we only go to war, coram Deo. Folks, I'm not glamorizing war tonight. Please understand that. Those of us that study war the most are least likely to go into war because we understand that war is hell.
Right.
And that it's the sum of all evils in one sense, as Stonewall Jackson said. So if you only go to war coram Deo, you're not going to go flippantly or half-heartedly or cocky.
You know the cost.
Here's another thing you can do, folks. Catechize your children. R.C. Sproul Jr. catechizes his children this way. Catechism, to catechize is to question and answer, response. He says, whom do Sprouls fear? So the dad asks his children, whom do Sprouls fear? And the children answer back, Sprouls fear no man, Sprouls fear God. Isn't that beautiful, folks? In inuring your children with martial disposition, whatever your last name is, Smiths fear no man, Smiths fear God. Yeah. The Joneses do not fear the New World Order or our president or Senate or whoever. They fear God alone.
God alone. And I fear God not being pleased with how I respond to the threats that come against his people. And that's where we do things from. So, folks, I hope you enjoyed this. I hope you recorded it, listened to it, get the archive. Well, we were able to get through the whole thing, so it was recorded, and it'll be up on Ustream.
Good.
And we didn't lose signal this time. Folks, this has been Stronghold Radio, specifically Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell from the Church at Kaweah. There are links on the Dutch Jones website. You're right there now listening to it. You can get sermons. You can get the Wednesday night teachings of God's providential history in America. It's all there for you. There is no reason for you to not find this information. We just see that Militant Christian Radio just went down after we finished. Just their transmitter or something went out. So we'll try and help you out there. See if we can send you more gear. So keep listening.
Thanks to IC.
IC Freedom just
thanks,
wrote.
Thank you for to his offering.
No King, but King Jesus. And we thank you for your love offering to the pastor and I. We appreciate that. It's going to keep us on the air for several more months. And we will continue to bring you the best that we can here. And just keep looking for the trainings, the teachings. If you're going to vacation in California, make us part of your vacation. We'll work the training in for you. So this has been Practical Christianity. Remember, the sword is heavy, the battle is hard, but the victory belongs to the Lord alone. The cool thing is, he wants you to be there with him. We'll be back tomorrow with more. Stay safe.